Good morning and welcome back to Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190, where every Saturday we interview top experts in the fields of legal, health, home improvement, and financial. I am your host, Kevin Ebeling. And this week I would like to welcome a brand new guest to the show, Dr. Sean Jones Quaidu. He is a board certified fellowship trained spine surgeon. He was featured on the cover of Texas MD magazine recently, and he was listed in the top percentile in the nation in patient satisfaction through Press Ganey. Thank you for joining us, Sean.
Good morning. Good morning, Kevin. Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you. We're very excited to have you here. And real quick, before we get into all the technical stuff, I would first like you to let our listeners know how you got started in this field, how long you've been doing it, that kind of thing. What's your background?
Well, all right. So basically, I was an engineer in undergrad at University of Maryland. My fascination with the mechanics of the world translated into the fascination of mechanics of the body. I was fortunate enough to go to medical school at UCLA, where while there, I stumbled upon orthopedics. It felt like a real natural fit. I again then was fortunate to obtain a great residency program at the University of Virginia. Trained extensively in the broad range of orthopedics, but I had a love for the complexity of the spine.
So orthopedics is kind of where you made your bones, no pun intended, and then it kind of you went on to the spine work.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. So I learned, again, all the mechanics of the body in orthopedics, did all the variety, but the spine was just so fascinating to me. And then, again, just great fortune in my life. Got a great fellowship at the Leatherman Spine Center in Louisville, Kentucky, second oldest spine fellowship in the nation, trained under many experts there in both orthopedics and neurosurgery for my spine training. And then I came to the fair city of Dallas to practice.
And how long have you been practicing here in Dallas?
So I guess I am in my third year of practice here.
And you have two locations, correct?
Two locations, yes. One in Dallas, Central Dallas, if you will, 7557 Rambler Road, Suite 730 is our main office. And then I'm opening up a second location in Allen as we speak. So that'll be opening up in April.
Well, if it's all right with you, I'd like to get in depth with this stuff. And my first question is, what is the process a patient would go through in order to see a spine surgeon such as yourself?
Well, I think that, you know, spine surgeons, I mean, I am a surgeon, but to see me, usually people have a lot of neck, mid-back, or low-back pain, and sometimes what commonly people describe as sciatic pain, radiating pain, that could be in their legs, their arms, or sometimes they have disease processes, not so commonly known, but people find that they're dropping objects, can't feel things. That so actually could be emanating from
essentially
the spine.
Unknowingly to the patient, they could have pain in some other part of their body that's related to the spine, and they have no idea.
Have no idea, but if they find themselves just all of a sudden their limbs aren't working,
sure,
and pain going from their back to other places, those would be indications to probably see someone like a spine specialist, and certainly they can start with their primary care doctor or pain management doctor. But at some point, if those things are persisting, seeing a spine surgeon would probably be in their best interest.
And at what point does one know that they should seek the help of a spine professionalist?
Well, I think there are many layers before getting to me as a subspecialist, and that's where I go back to the many talented physicians in town, the primary care doctors that are seeing these patients with the aches and pain. A lot of these things subside in 2 weeks. People have stress or strain to their back. But when they persist longer than, say, 4 weeks or two months even, I think that's time to maybe see a subspecialist like myself, a spine surgeon.
Are there types of conditions that you see a lot more often than others that are just generally more common?
Yeah, so if you think about what commonly brings patients to a doctor, that would be the low back pain. I believe that there are many disease processes that go along with having low back pain, such as fracture of their spine, slipping of one bone or vertebral body against another. Degenerative disc is a common term people describe. I was told I had a degenerative disc or a disc bulge. Those are problems that commonly come to me as a spine surgeon. And then going back to that term of sciatic pain, that burning, shooting electrical pain into the back of the leg, or even just numbness and tingling into their legs, those are problems that I commonly would see that are emanating from the spine. things that are not as obvious
right.
a connection would be the loss of urine, loss of stool. It sounds gross, but those could be problems that are caused by compression of your spinal cord. So there again, issues that aren't readily apparent coming from the spine.
And I think when people hear about complications involving the spine, it's something that can be very frightening and very daunting. And I was talking with you a little bit before the show, and it seems like you have a very good bedside manner, that there's really nothing to be afraid of when it comes to this kind of thing. So what can people expect when they go to see a spine surgeon?
Well, I think I would hope that things that they would expect from seeing any spine surgeon would be a comprehensive, compassionate care. And that's what I really strive to provide in my practice. And thank you for the compliment. But it is certainly something that I pride myself on in treating all my patients like family and helping them understand their disease process. I think with understanding comes clarity of mind, and particularly in helping with the decision making.
Sure.
Spine surgery can be a very scary thing, as you said, but I think if people understand what they're getting into and why, and also that there's another side to this, there is relief of pain, there is a better quality of life on the other side of this. My goal is to help people understand what's going on and how we can improve their health.
Right. You can improve something. I mean, a problem that someone could have possibly lived with for years. And
absolutely.
It's a relatively quick solution, and that can provide you an overall much better quality of life.
Absolutely. So let's take, for example, we talked about common pathology I might see in the spine, the herniated disc. Well, there are minimally invasive approaches, which we could talk a bit more about later, but there are things that I can offer a patient to really, in a small way, impact their life for a moment in time for a longer, greater quality of life.
And we've talked about what some common conditions are. What are some more some common treatments?
So I think that it is appropriate to start out with conservative treatments. Again, I emphasize I'm a spine surgeon, but things that I would emphasize as far as initially treating many patients would be oral medications such as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication. That class of drugs are more commonly known as your ibuprofen, Motrin, Aleve.
So an over-the-counter type thing.
Over-the-counter, absolutely.
Okay.
And if those things aren't working alongside with activity modification, we may try things such as physical therapy. If that weren't enough, we could include things such as epidural steroid injections. I know there was some controversy in the news a little over a year ago, I guess, about contamination of some of the medications being injected in the spinal area. But aside from that, that is a relatively safe procedure with, you know, clean drugs, if you will.
Right.
But with those injections, a lot of times we can temporize and diminish pain. And for some people, that could be very effective. But when all of these various modalities don't work well enough or provide a long-lasting effect, a quality of life improvement, then we start talking about more direct surgical intervention. So I like to employ all of these modalities, but then when it comes time for surgery, then I'm really devising a plan that is effective and individualized, if you will. Younger patients who don't have as much of a degenerated disease
sure.
spine, we're looking to do the least amount of invasiveness to get the best result. So we use minimally invasive techniques, small incisions, very little tissue disruption to take care of the pathology. But there are times where the disease process is very extensive, very bad, and we have to do things a bit more invasive. But at the same time, technology has advanced so much that we can do powerful things, correct a lot of...
It almost gives you the advantage to be minimally invasive.
There are advantages to being minimally invasive. Absolutely. Where it's appropriate, you can minimize the trauma to the surrounding tissue to take care of pathology. It sounds like I'm just rattling off words here, but it is beautiful. It's almost artistic the way you could address problems of the spine through small incisions, but be so impactful in correcting, again, deformity. Someone's back who's broken down and their bones, which have discs in between them, discs are like sponges or shock absorbers.
Okay.
When those disappear and you have like bone on bone grinding, imagine if I could reproduce, like redevelop that height loss that was once a disc that's now bone on bone. I could recreate that space. In so doing, I've corrected what was lost in your spine. I can do that through very small incisions now and really help your, well, not your pain, Kevin, but the patient's pain.
No, I understand what you mean, doctor.
Absolutely.
Now, we're coming up against our very first break, so before, I can tell, obviously, your knowledge and your passion on this subject are top-notch. Before we go to break, can you tell everyone how they can find out more about you, more about your practice, if they want to get more information?
Absolutely. So we have a beautiful, well-designed website. If they would go to Dallas-SpineSurgeon.com, spine surgeon being one word, and they could also call us at 214-301-3808.
Well, we have a lot more to get into with Dr. Sean Jones Kwedu. As soon as we get back from this very short break, we'll be right back with you on Talk Radio 1190. Back on Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190. I'm your host, Kevin Ebeling. We have Dr. Sean Jones Kwedu sitting in here with us this week. We're very lucky to have him. His credentials are through the roof. He was recently featured on the cover of Texas MD Magazine. He was also listed in top percentile in the nation for patient satisfaction through Press Ganey. So we are very lucky to have him in our studio today. How are you, sir?
Thanks again for having me. I feel very lucky and fortunate to be here with you this morning.
It is my pleasure, and I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right back into it. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about treatments for spine conditions, because as we know, you are a board-certified, fellowship-trained spine surgeon. And my next question is, you spoke a little bit about conservative treatments. Can you give our listeners kind of a broad definition of what you would consider conservative?
Conservative treatment, sure. Broad definition, I would say activity modification changes. I mean, it sounds silly, but bending over and picking up that heavy box without good technique is just bad for you.
Absolutely.
So learning better techniques or stop doing that. Then we're talking about oral pain medication, sometimes injections. But I would say that falls into the spectrum of conservative management.
Okay. So those are, I mean, are there any other, what you would consider conservative treatment options as far other than over-the-counter or just kind of lifestyle changes?
The injection, which is a bit invasive, it's injection
a little
of medication.
More invasive, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more invasive injection of medication in the area to kind of decrease the inflammation, decrease the irritation. But I would say that's pretty much the extent of conservative management.
And what type of specialists generally treat patients with conservative type treatments?
Well, the primary care physician really is where it all starts. But thereafter, we do have in this town pain management doctors, a plethora of them. And that's one thing I kind of pride myself on as well, is really creating a team environment, working with the primary care physician, working with the pain management doctor as a team effort to try and help the patient. So for as many patients as I see in my clinic initially that may come de novo, meaning not from another referral source, I'm oftentimes sending them back out to these other specialists for that conservative treatment management. And then those that, say, don't respond effectively end up, say, coming back to me for the more invasive surgical intervention.
Do you typically see patients who are more successful with conservative-type treatment options rather than surgical? Or is it fairly common that they'll need a surgical option?
Actually, you know, great question. The majority of people don't need surgery. The majority of individuals don't need surgery.
And I think just hearing that alone would come as a tremendous relief to a lot of people who are just very afraid of any kind of surgical procedure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I tell patients all the time, I love being a surgeon. I love to operate. I don't fear it at all. But not everyone needs a surgery. And I help them understand it. I go over imaging studies in the office, help them understand the mechanics of the spine, and help them realize, hey, the surgery is not where you need to be right now. Maybe at some point in time, maybe not. But really, we want to exhaust all conservative management. So I would say greater than 80 to 90% of people probably don't need surgical intervention. They need time, they need activity modification, they need that conservative management. But then that 10% outlier, again, after working with the primary care physician, the pain management doctors, and the physical therapist, then those 10% would say need my care.
Just out of curiosity, do you ever come across patients who have totally convinced themselves that they have to have some kind of surgery, that their problem must be beyond conservative treatments, who just don't want to accept that option?
Wow. I mean, is this like, is someone in the room? Absolutely. I meet those patients. It is amazing to me. They actually come in ready to sign any document to say, hey, time for my surgery.
Right, yeah. Exactly. They're ready to jump on the table right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. And you know, I don't rush to that procedure. I really, again, focus on the education aspect. Let them understand what they are getting into and what surgery can do. I mean, there's limitations to all aspects of medicine. Surgery is very powerful, but it's not necessarily the answer for everything. And so when appropriate, we may proceed, but when not appropriate, I'll say, hey, this
absolutely
isn't the right thing for you.
How often would you say you treat a patient with a surgical procedure?
I
know that's kind of a general question. Yeah. It's maybe a little hard to answer.
A little hard to answer. I mean, I maybe only somewhere between 8 to 10% of all the patients that even come into my office end up being surgical. I mean,
okay,
it really is a low percentage because, again, majority of people don't need the surgery. They need conservative management. They need a change in lifestyle.
Adjustments in their day-to-day life.
And I tell you, it is fascinating. After they've been educated on the disease process, it's like their mind accepts and then their body responds. You know, after I've helped them understand, maybe you don't need surgery now.
Right.
It's almost like it provides its own pain relief.
Absolutely.
You know, if nothing else, the stress of worrying about.
Sure, it can be an awakening of both mind and body.
There you go. Fantastic. Look, I'm treating you already. You get it.
Yeah. You're working your magic on me right now. Now, also, generally kind of speaking, can you tell our audience when is it necessary to get surgery?
So I think that the important message for when to say, hey, I need to do something about this, persisting problems. So I mentioned earlier about, hey, if it's really going on for 4 weeks, 2 months, that's pushing the envelope. I think you should see a specialist like myself as a spine surgeon, because when disease processes get chronic, now we're talking like over 6 months,
right,
they're harder to respond to the treatment. The deficit or the problem may persist even after treatment. And that's a unfortunate occurrence, if you will. So, for example, someone develops a foot drop. It is exactly what it sounds like. They can't lift their foot up.
Okay.
That could be due to a nerve compression problem. I mean, there are other sources for why that may occur outside of the spine or the back region. But if it does come from that area, left unaddressed, imagine this. 6 months have passed. The limb is smaller. Your leg is smaller. It's weaker. I decompress the nerve. You have to go through months and months of rehab, probably longer than that 6 months, just to get that function back.
Right, because you let it get to that point.
Absolutely, absolutely. So rather than let your body become limp or lame, if you will, address it before you get to such a far position of loss that treating it becomes harder, if you will.
And I'm sure there are times where just fear of seeking treatment is exacerbating the problem exponentially and the patients have no idea.
This is so true. And I've been blessed, but it's been unfortunate for some patients that I've seen them go that far with the disease process. I've been blessed to be able to finally get an opportunity to intervene when they see me. You act as quickly as possible. And I've had some great recovery outcomes. But at times, I've done very complex cervical spine cases, for example, that where there's spinal cord compression and disease processes there can be devastating, if you will. Things that occur in your neck could affect everything else beneath it. So
right,
both arms, legs, bladder, bowel function, and that being left too long is a devastating disease process.
And I just want to dive in a little bit more specifically into surgery. What is minimally invasive spine surgery versus traditional surgical procedures?
Sure. So you hear the word or the term minimally invasive quite commonly around town. This is, I guess, the attempt to be muscle sparing, and it has its place. It's very effective surgery. This is where I give a procedure or offer a procedure to someone that can take care of very specific problems without much downtime because of trauma to surrounding tissue.
Right.
Now, traditional surgery, if you will, is a bit more extensive. There's a bit more muscle movement out of the way, a bit more exposure of the whole spine, if you will. There are times that's needed. I will not sit here and tell you that's bad. At times, that amount of exposure is needed. But when appropriate, you can find a balance between the two. And I feel, again, very fortunate for the training that I have had. I do minimally invasive. I do maximally invasive. I do what the patient
needs.
Okay,
so you do cover the whole spectrum.
I cover the whole spectrum from the neck down through the thoracic and lumbar spine, minimally invasive, maximally invasive, anterior surgeries, posterior surgeries, and anterior, as it sounds, through the front of the neck, through someone's abdomen. And then at times when I can use minimally invasive approaches, I can still correct very bad disease processes that people can recover from very quickly. And that's really the main difference is that recovery time.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to ask you about next, because we're almost out of time. But real quick, I really wanted you to give people a chance to find out, what is the general, I know I'm always asking you these very broad questions, you have a very vast knowledge, it's kind of difficult to answer them in a broad sense, but what is the general recovery time for a spinal surgery procedure?
So, minimally invasive certainly gets you up and about, and it depends what we're dealing with. In the neck, actually, for the majority of my patients, they're getting up and walking same day. Let me just put that out there. That is one of the things I really pride myself on. Whether I'm doing minimally invasive, maximally invasive, I'm doing something that gets people back to functional living. But in general, 2 weeks, the initial recovery, addressing the pain of the surgical intervention, really at about 6 weeks, you're feeling pretty good. At 3 months, you're about 90% there. And as I commonly say to patients, what you have at a year is what you probably have going forward.
Sure.
But you're living life long before that. You've been given a new lease on life long before that.
Well, I think you're providing a very, very great service. And we're just about at the end of our segment. But before we go, can you let people know how they can get in touch with you, find out more about your practice, all the pertinent information?
Absolutely, absolutely. Please go and check out our newly designed website, Dallas-SpineSurgeon.com. And that's all one word run together, as well as the phone number. You can reach us at 214-301-3808. Listen, Kevin, thank you so very much for allowing me to be on your show today.
I want to say thank you, doctor. I feel very enlightened. I would trust you with my spine right now if I had an issue, I promise.
Well, thank you.
We hope to see you back soon.
Take care now.
All right, we will be right back on Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190.